midst of all that's going on, it is still our nation's birthday, and we have an obligation to take this nation back to what it used to be, to the good and grateful and decent nation that it was before this illegal, nasty administration took over. So keep that in mind tomorrow. Don't disdain the festivities of the 4th of July and the birth of our nation just because we've got a group of bastards running it right now. Things will change, and with your help, they will. You are listening to The Guy James Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The Family and Medical Leave Act is working as intended, is important for working families, and it needs to be paid leave. Those are among the findings drawn from 15,000 public comments on the act gathered by the U.S. Department of Labor. The Department of Labor's Victoria Lipnick says there is broad consensus that family and medical leave is good for workers and their families, is in the public interest, and is good workplace policy. The AFL-CIO says the law does need to be improved, making the leave paid leave. Some employers have complained about having to accommodate workers to grant that leave, but the Labor Department has no plans to ask for changes in the law. It's hard to say the last time there was a labor anthem in the top 100, but if Steve Doobie and his band have their way, it will be on July 4th. Jesse Russell reports.
Troubled by the rising tide of offshoring around the country, musician and CSEA Local 2001 member Steve Doobie put pen to paper and wrote an anthem called Mad in America for his band ETX.
The song was written as a protest, basically, just because of all the production and engineering jobs and IT jobs going away.
Doobie is now trying to bring that protest via song to music lovers everywhere by landing on iTunes Top 100 on July 4th. How? Doobie is calling on everyone to log into their iTunes player on the Independence Day holiday and download the song. If enough people do it, Mad in America should hypothetically find a place among the Avril Lavigne's and Fall Out Boys of the world.
We'd like, you know, to get a grassroots effort going where the song could become like an anthem for American workers, just to show Washington in an election year that we don't want the middle class to go away and we want jobs in the United States.
You can find the song by searching for Mad in America or ETX in iTunes.
Fast-track trade authority has expired, and the Democrat-controlled Congress isn't interested in extending it. Fast-track is used by the president to negotiate trade deals that are then not amendable by Congress. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is opposing South Korean and Colombian free trade deals and any renewal of fast-track authority until trade policies are changed to protect the interests of working people. If you see a guy in a dress walking through the airport during your next trip, it could be a protesting air traffic controller, upset with a new Federal Aviation Administration dress code that bars jogging outfits, jeans, shorts, and halter tops. Workers are allowed to wear dress slacks, casual shirts with collars and sweaters. Some male workers have taken to occasionally wearing the dresses or kilts to protest the code, which they have deemed silly.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Well, he did it. He did it. President Bush did it. In order to cover up for the most treasonous vice president since Aaron Burr, perhaps even worse. After all, Aaron Burr wasn't convicted of treason. In order to cover up for a traitorous act, George Bush Sr., by the way, former President Bush, called the outing of a CIA agent a traitorous act. In order to cover up for the traitor, George Bush made a nice little quid pro quo. He said, Scooter, you don't tell them how we violated national security. You don't tell them that we sacrificed American lives for political reasons, and we'll make sure you never go to jail. Quid pro quo is done, and not enough people are angry. CNN had coverage, of course, when it happened, and they talked about the fact it was a commutation, not a pardon. Oh, Scooter won't go to jail, but he'll still have to pay a big fine. that will be provided to him by all the right-wingers who fund this presidency. Given the $100 billion we've given of taxpayer money to Halliburton, I'm sure Dick Cheney can afford a paltry $250,000 to pay for covering up national secrets. Joe Wilson was predictably livid, as well he should be, the ambassador who had the audacity to let the American people know the president had lied to them in a State of the Union speech, no less, about nuclear war possibilities, no less, claiming that Saddam Hussein was seeking uranium, not just the aluminum tubes, that was another lie, but seeking uranium from the African country of Niger, found out it was all a lie, sent down by the CIA to find out it was all a lie, reported back to the president lied to the American people anyway, and so he decided to do what patriotic Americans do, and that is let them know when the president of the United States is lying to sneak them into a war that would eventually cost 3,500 lives and counting, tens of thousands of wounded and counting, hundreds of thousands of Iraqi civilians dead and counting, and millions of Iraqi refugees and counting. Well, I had the distinct pleasure and honor to interview Joe Wilson myself, Ambassador Joseph Wilson, the man behind the woman who was doing so much good for America, who was working undercover as an operative in various countries, working precisely to protect us from weapons of mass destruction. And here we have a president who went to war ostensibly on weapons of mass destruction. I mean, that's the reason they gave us to go to war in Iraq, right? That's the reason they gave us to go there. They were lying. But she, her job is to protect us. And what it shows is that the president not only does not care about protecting American spies, but he doesn't care about protecting us from weapons of mass destruction. All he cares about is oil fields and permanent military bases. But I want you to compare what happened to this president, to this Vice President Cheney. I mean, we all know Cheney's really in control here, with what happened to other famous traitors in American history. Benedict Arnold wasn't captured, but if he had, he would have been hanged. Aaron Burr, the last vice president accused of treason, was tried. He was actually acquitted. Somehow I think if Scooter Libby had told the full truth and nothing but the truth, Cheney would not have been acquitted. Others convicted of espionage have gotten far worse. Julius and Ethel Rosenberg sold atomic secrets to the Soviets. They were executed. And indeed, a death sentence for treason is part of the National Code. And now the Republicans are gnashing of teeth are saying treason is no big deal. Traitorous acts are no big deal. It's no big deal. Folks, look away. Look away. The president has the right to pardon anyone he wants. If the vice president were to go out and not just shoot his lawyer in the face, but go and gun down 100 people on federal property, making it a federal crime, and this president were to pardon him, look away. It's his right to do it. National security is not important, they are saying. What the CIA does is not important, they are saying. American security is not important. Integrity, the rule of law, none of it's important. Look away. Look away. Well, as I said, I had the distinct honor and pleasure to interview Ambassador Wilson, and I'm going to play for you the full, about 15-minute interview in its entirety in this broadcast. Now, this interview was done about a week and a half ago. It was certainly done before the Scooter commutation of Senate, but certainly it was on the horizon. It was something we talked about. It was after Scooter had been convicted. It was after the trial judge, to his credit, the trial judge is a Bush appointee, but strangely enough, believes in the rule of law. And this judge said, I'm sorry, Scooter, you've been convicted of obstruction of justice, you've been convicted of perjury, you've been convicted of throwing sand in the face of the referee in order to hide from Patrick Fitzgerald the vice president's crimes. And that's, you know, this is the words of Patrick Fitzgerald. These aren't my words. He's the one that talked about the cloud over the vice president's office. Patrick Fitzgerald, a Republican U.S. attorney appointed by George W. Bush. But what do you know? There are honest Republicans out there. It went to an appeals court, and I was concerned. I admit it, I was concerned the D.C. Court of Appeals, packed as it is with Republican judges, would ignore the rule of law. But all three judges, two appointed by Republicans, one appointed by Clinton, agreed unanimously in a one-sentence order that Scooter Libby had no chance on appeal. Time to go to jail, Scooter. Time to go to jail. So what does Ambassador Joe Wilson think about all this? Well, I'm going to take a quick break because I want to take a break a little bit early so that we can play the full 15 minutes in full. When we come back, you're going to hear from the man himself, Ambassador Joe Wilson. And afterwards, I want to encourage you to call in. Toll-free number is 888-488-MARK. The head-on toll-free number isn't working right now, but mine is 888-488-MARK. We have a lot to talk about with the Scooter Libby pardon. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at headonradionetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
Headonradionetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at headonradionetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters, all you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hi, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real, but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, forward it to phishing@irs.gov. That's phishing at irs.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484. Thank you.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. What was the quid pro quo for Libby's silence? And why isn't the mainstream media asking these very simple questions, such as, if Libby had gone to jail, would he have turned state's evidence against Cheney? After all, it was Cheney who ordered him to out the CIA agent, Valerie Wilson. It was Cheney who was writing in the margins of that article, telling him exactly what to do to smear Joe Wilson, even if it meant damaging national security. Sir, sure, Libby said nothing. He said nothing at the trial. He said he might testify. He didn't. Cheney said he might testify. He said nothing. Of course they've got something to hide. But the question is, if Libby had gone to jail for a day, was he ready to squeal like a pig? Is that why it was so essential to free him? And if Libby's silence was bought, does it matter? Do Americans have a right to know? In all the discussion on CNN and MSNBC, well, the president has an absolute right to pardon. Did they ever question whether it should be investigated? Whether, after all, Congress investigated the Mark Rich pardon, and as stupid as that was of Bill Clinton, there's no known quid pro quo there. Here the quid pro quo is obvious. This is a president that's pardoned very, very few people. And this is the first time he did so outside of federal guidelines, which say that the person has to feel contrite. Libby gave no apology. That says that they normally have to serve 5 years or at least serve some time. Remember, Susan McDougal served 18 months. Started to say 180 days, but it's really three times that amount. She served 18 months. Why isn't the media asking the obvious question? Look, when you're going to take down a corrupt investigation, any prosecutor will tell you, you start low and you move up. You find the low-level drug dealer and you say to him, look, we got the goods on you. We caught you selling the drugs. Tell us who the drug kingpin is, and we'll give you very little time. We may even let you go free, but you got to tell us. So in this case, you have the lower drug dealer saying, I ain't going to tell you. He's convicted, and the drug kingpin sets him free. There is a cloud over the office of the Vice President of the United States, and I want to know why the mainstream media isn't covering this. Fox News was hilarious. The Fox propaganda channel, I watched that last night just, I don't know why, just for kicks. They got to Scooter Libby in the 38th minute of the O'Reilly Hour, and they were concluded with it by the 40th minute. And in those very important 2 minutes of covering up treason to the United States of America, in those very important 2 minutes, they had two guests, one ostensibly a Republican, one ostensibly a Democrat, both agreeing the pardon of Libby was the right thing to do. You know, at least Pravda and the Soviet Union admitted it was a propaganda organization, but it wasn't as good as the Fox propaganda channel. But enough from me, enough filibustering. I know what you came to hear. You came to hear Joe Wilson, and I don't blame you. Here's my interview with Ambassador Joe Wilson just 2 weeks ago.
Ambassador Joe Wilson, welcome back to the Inside Scoop.
Well, it's good to be with you, Mark.
There's so much that's gone on since the last time we talked a couple years ago. Of course, the infamous Scooter Libby conviction. Now we read in the newspaper today of course, you know, the lower court judge said he has to go to jail right away, but now he's going to appeal to a very political court. The D.C. Court of Appeals is pretty stacked with Bush appointees, and obviously it seems like the goal is to run out the clock. He doesn't go to jail, and there may be a pardon at the end. Do you think he will get that? Do you think he'll get a stay in the D.C.
Well,
Court of Appeals?
I don't know, but I will say what I've said all along about this case. My view is that I have all the confidence in the world in the system of justice and in the rule of law, and I fully expect the appellate court to act consistent with their responsibilities under the law. And my understanding is that they would have to determine that, in fact, there are a number of issues where Mr. Libby's defense team actually might have a chance of overturning the conviction, absent that. And I think Judge Walton, who I think was masterful in the management of this case, has made it very clear, as has the prosecutor, as has the government, the U.S. government made it very clear, that they don't believe that there is a lot of reason to assume that this case will be overturned.
What are your concerns about a pardon?
Well, I remind people that the crime that Mr. Libby was convicted of was not a crime against Joe Wilson. It was a crime against the country. So my concerns would be the same concerns that are shared by Americans. But fundamentally, when you convict on obstruction of justice, it seems to me that the crime is ongoing because you have prevented the investigators from reaching their conclusions as to who else might have been involved. In fact, Mr. Fitzgerald made that very clear in a number of his statements about there being a cloud over the office of the vice president. I think from an ethical perspective, it is inconceivable to me that the president wouldn't recuse himself from something that involves a direct subordinate of his. Remember, Mr. Libby was an assistant to the president. It would be the first time in the history of the country, I think, that somebody would have been pardoned to really exonerate or remove from the cloud from the office of the vice president and from the vice president himself. And I think that would be unreasonable to do. At the same time, the president has these powers. I would just hope that he would use them in a judicious fashion. If you're not prepared to heed the Pope when he calls for clemency for Carla Faye Tucker, who is the first woman who was executed in Texas when Bush was governor, first woman since the Civil War, I think, it's hard to see why you would pardon Mr. Libby, who has been convicted of perjury and obstruction of justice.
You mentioned the cloud over the vice president's office. Also, Special Prosecutor Fitzgerald talked about throwing sand in the umpire's face.
Right.
What is the cloud? What is the sand? What are they covering up? I mean, the implicit suggestion, it seems to me, is that the vice president ordered Scooter Libby to out your wife as a CIA agent.
That's certainly my conclusion. And so when everybody talks about all these people who are pundits are out there talking about a pardon for Libby, what they're really doing, it seems to me, is they're making themselves accessory to the ongoing crime, protecting the vice president from facing the music on his particular role in this. When the vice president marks up a piece of paper, as he marked up my opinion piece, those are generally taken not as idle questions from the part of an idle reader, but rather talking points to be used by his staff. Those were instructions to his staff. Now, the vice president might argue otherwise, but I have sat in the White House. I've been on the receiving end of marked up pieces of paper where the president and the vice president marked up pieces of paper across their desk. And they are always taken as action memos by staff.
I've also worked for a member of Congress, and when he wrote on the side of an article, no, that was not an idle point. Mm-hmm. He wanted me to do something about it.
Absolutely.
But when you have Dick Cheney, he did testify in a deposition, correct? I know he didn't testify at trial. But wasn't there a deposition taken, or maybe there wasn't?
No, I don't think he was deposed. What he did, he was interviewed by the prosecutor.
He was interviewed.
Sure.
Under oath or not under oath?
Well, you're always, as a federal official, you're always expected to tell the truth. So
right.
Even if he was not under oath, if he testified falsely,
he could be
indicted. Lying to federal investigators is a crime. Absolutely.
Okay. So now he talked to federal investigators. The president did. Karl Rove did. There was a lot of discussion throughout this that maybe Karl Rove should. I mean, we now know that Karl Rove was one of the ones who was spreading,
he was one of
his name around.
That's right.
Why do you think he wasn't prosecuted?
Well, you'd have to ask Fitzgerald about that. But
obviously,
it's very clear that the Intelligence Identities Protection Act is a difficult act to prosecute. Apparently, in the act, there is a get-out-of-jail-free card. If you claim that you didn't know that the person was covert at the time that you were divulging that person's identity, then you can't be prosecuted under the act, which means that those who drafted the act, Victoria Tonsing, who takes great credit as being one of the drafters, essentially did a very bad job, because it seems to me we don't want people divulging the identities of covert officers. And Valerie was a covert officer. They'd make no mistake about it. They continue to argue she wasn't. But, of course, the CIA, the current director, the former director, they've all said that she was a covert officer, and she was a covert officer. Fitzgerald has acknowledged it. So
they still make that argument. I have to tell you, I mean, I know you know this, but I have Republicans on my show all the time, and whenever we talk about this case, one of the first things out of their mouth was, everybody knew. And so I always say, the same thing you said. The CIA says
yeah.
no. Patrick Fitzgerald
That's
says no. And I say, name one person without a top secret clearance who knew, and no one can come up with a name.
That's a lie. Cliff May started spreading that around. And of course, Cliff May wasn't part of the trial, so He was just talking through his hat. You know, these guys lie even when they don't have to, just to stay in shape.
But their argument is that because Patrick Fitzgerald didn't convict Libby on the Intelligence Identities Act, that therefore somehow she wasn't covert.
Al Capone was convicted not of being a racketeer, but of tax evasion. Alger Hiss was convicted not of being a spy, but of perjury. Scooter Libby was convicted of lying to federal investigators, perjury, and obstruction of justice. He is a traitor.
Because it's easier to prove?
It's easier to prosecute. There is this whole phenomenon of gray mail, whereas if you're a defendant and you're trying to defend yourself against accusations that you violated the national security of the country, you claim the right, as this guy Klein, his attorney, did with Ollie North and did again with Libby, you claim the right to have access to every classified document that ever crossed your desk. And that puts the government in a position of trying to determine what's more important to the government, protection of the national security of the country or prosecution of somebody who's betrayed it in one meaningful way, but in one limited fashion.
Now, you have a civil suit. You and your wife, Valerie Plame Wilson, have a civil suit against the government. I understand that I think it's under submission right now, right?
Yeah, it's actually not against the government. It's against individuals in the government, the vice president, Scooter Libby, Karl Rove, and Rich Armitage. And the argument that we're making is that their abuse of power was far beyond what their official duties called for. They were using their official positions to wage a personal political vendetta against me and against Valerie. They're arguing that they have sovereign immunity and therefore should not be subject to...
Right. They're arguing that even if all of this is true, put that aside because you can't sue us.
Yeah, they can do anything they want when they're in power. We're saying it's an abuse of power. And our objective is threefold. And people, by the way, people can go to our website, which is www.wilsonsupport.org, and they can get all the information, including our complaint that was 75 pages of the complaint that we filed. But we have three basic objectives. One is to get the truth out, and none of the four people that we're suing testified in Libby's criminal trial, including Libby. Two is we want to hold to account those who would use their positions of public trust to engage in such personal political vendettas. And three, we want to use this as a deterrent to future generations of public servants from engaging in this sort of activity. You know, you've worked in the public sector. You know what your responsibilities are as a public servant and your official duties. And you know the difference between official duties and personal vendettas. And you probably know the difference between right and wrong, I would guess. Most people do. These people don't. And we want to make sure that that they do learn that lesson.
Now, as an ex-trial attorney, I mean, can you do discovery, or do you have to win this motion first?
Well, we have to win the motion first.
Okay.
They've requested summary dismissal. Once we should hear from the judge sometime in the next 30 days as to whether or not the case can go forward. After which we would then go for discovery.
Is one of the things you're seeking to discover these interviews that these officials gave to the FBI and others, or do you already have access to those?
I don't know. My attorneys know all that. My guess is that we don't have access to work product in the criminal case, but I think we would...
Well, an official interview, I don't know if that's work product. I mean, if someone takes an official... I mean, like a police statement, for example... I know you can get those in civil cases. It seems to me that when the police formally interview the Vice President of the United States, that's more than work product. That's an official statement.
Well, we would certainly hope that we would be able to get access to all the information that's necessary to enable us to pursue the case, because the first objective is to get the truth out. Certainly we've got a great organization that's managing the case, CREW, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington.
They're terrific.
Run by Melanie Sloan. She's just terrific. We have a good First Amendment lawyer in Erwin Chemerinsky, who is a law professor at Duke University.
I know him well.
And we have a law firm out of San Francisco, Kachet, Petrie, and McCarthy. They will assist in doing the actual depositions. And my fantasy is to be able to webcast Dick Cheney's deposition live.
And just watch him commit perjury there and then. Let me ask you this. At the end of the day, I know you don't know all the facts. None of us know all the facts. But your best guess, I don't know if you want to venture this now, what happened? I mean, Rich Armitage, that's a weird one in all this. That was a name that surprised everybody. We all suspected Karl Rove and Scooter Libby and Dick Cheney. What was really going on here? Why did Armitage leak Valerie Plame Wilson's name? And the others I get. I guess I get Karl Rove. I mean, the political motives are very clear to me. What do you think was Armitage's motive?
Well, in the case of Rich, of course, he claims that he was just an inveterate gossip, which is which is difficult for us to understand because, after all, this is a man who operated in the highest reaches of the American intelligence community for almost a generation. And for him to have been so sloppy, he who knows what it means to be undercover, to have been so sloppy with his identity is just incomprehensible. He's the one we're really looking forward to getting under oath.
And he was the first one, story. I believe.
Well, I don't know. There were Rove and Libby who were going around doing this, managing this. The level of coordination and cooperation between the two is something we're looking at. Whether or not Armitage was just an outlier or if, in fact, he was doing a favor for Karl Rove is something that we hope to determine.
Now, at the end of the day, of course, you've used the very strong word traitor. I have used that word as well. As I know you know, George Herbert Walker Bush, George Bush the First, said the outing of a CIA agent is a traitorous act. In terms of the actual damage done, now that it's no longer a secret, I don't know what you can tell. If you can't tell, you can't tell. But what are the kinds of things? I know that your wife, Ms. Wilson, was working as an agent on weapons of mass destruction type intelligence. Can you give us an idea, to the extent it's already in the public domain, of what she was doing to protect the United States and how her work was harmed?
Well, she's got a book coming out in October, and she will be able to tell everything that the CIA will let her tell. There's obviously a number of other books that are out there that have looked into it. What I can tell you is that she went to work every day determined to ensure that weapons of mass destruction would not go off on American soil, attempting to disrupt those sorts of programs. She served her country for 20 years. The CIA doesn't want her to say that, but they approved my book, which says it. And they redacted it. They read my book and approved that, so I feel confident in talking about that. The question really is, after her identity was betrayed, what were the consequences?
Were there other people working for her whose lives may have been
the CIA endangered? Would have done a damage assessment. They would not share the results of that with us, but the working assumption would be that every contact she'd made over a 20-year career, every operation she was involved with, every program she was running, even innocent friendships would all have been compromised as a consequence of the actions taken by Mr. Libby, Mr. Rove, Mr. Armitage, and perhaps others in betraying her status as a covert CIA officer.
So we have the civil suit coming up. We have your wife's book coming out in October. Then do the Wilsons calm down some?
She's suing the CIA Director of Central Intelligence and the Director of National Intelligence with Simon & Schuster because they don't want her to be able to acknowledge that she actually worked for the CIA before 2002. So that's another piece of litigation that we've got going. It's an absurdity because you Google her name and you get 2 million hits, many
sure.
of which come from foreign newspapers, which have reported extensively on her tenure in their countries. But we're working on that. Our hope is that we will be able to get on with our lives after this is over. We will be involved, I'll be involved particularly in next year's congressional elections, in the presidential elections. I will go out and campaign for any candidate. I'll go out and campaign against some. Peter King in Long Island is one who's a lick spittle, and I always like the opportunity to go to Long Island. Norm Coleman, who is
he's awful, a
Karl Rove lackey.
Yeah.
So there's a few that I'm actively go out and campaign against, but mostly I'll be campaigning on behalf of candidates who I think will do a better job serving our country than the incumbents.
Ambassador Joe Wilson, thank you for coming here on the Inside Scoop.
It's good to be with you again, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Well, you heard him in your own words. Let me repeat the three most important statements I found that he said, although you're welcome to comment yourself. One, that by doing this commutation, at the time we were talking about a pardon would be an accessory to an ongoing crime. Obstruction of justice is not a crime that has been committed. It is an ongoing crime. The crime is still there because there's still a cover-up, and whoever pardons someone for obstruction of justice, and I have to say, I've never heard of an instance of commutation of obstruction of justice at any time in American history because it is an ongoing crime. Whoever commutes that sentence is, in Joe Wilson's view, an accessory to the crime. And indeed, if George Bush wasn't an accessory to the crime, why would he pardon Scooter Libby? Second, to the question of whether Valerie Wilson was covert, she was. You heard it from Joe Wilson himself. The CIA says it. Joe Wilson says it. Patrick Fitzgerald says it. When we come back, I'm going going to be reading from the indictment of Scooter Libby. So you know that Patrick Fitzgerald was ready, willing, and able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that she was a covert agent, just kind of abolish that stupid Republican lie forever. And lastly, you heard those famous words from Joe Wilson that I've got to get, you know, just those little, that little clip. I've got to play it again and again. He said, Al Capone wasn't convicted of racketeering. He was convicted of tax evasion. Alger Hiss was not convicted of being a spy. He was put in jail for perjury. Scooter Libby was convicted of lying under oath, of perjury, of obstruction of justice. He is a traitor. He is a traitor. Or as George Herbert Walker Bush, Bush Sr., once said, quote, I have nothing but contempt and anger for those who betray the trust by exposing the name of our sources. They are, in my view, the most insidious of traitors. A lot of you have commented on the blog. We'll be reading your comments. If you want to call in, this is a live show. Let me hear from you. 888-488-MARK. 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
It wasn't exactly planes, trains, and automobiles on Head On with Bob Kincaid.
This is what the Bush Administration Justice Department didn't want you to see back in 2001. They took out and they huffed the marker a little bit, and then they went, oh, cool. And they wiped out the name where it says, the plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royalty family or Osama bin Laden. Somebody's got to call up and say, good afternoon. Thank you for calling Ryan International Flights. How may I help you?
Hello. This is Osama bin Laden, and I would like to rent a Boeing 727. Do you have one handy?
Oh, just a moment. Let me check. It's a Mr. bin Laden wants to know if we got a 727. Do we, Harry, do we have a 727?
Yeah, we got a 727 just sitting there on the lot. Going cheap.
There's nothing here. Nothing to look at. Keep moving. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. The, you know, the 6'7" Arab with the portable dialysis machine and the white robes. Somebody's trying.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, weeknight, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Head On Radio Network.
America's most dangerous investigative reporter, Greg Pallast, joins Bob Kincaid for a bit of conversation radio.
But I have to tell you, this is such a pleasure to be able to actually lay it out.
Greg, anytime you want to lay it out, okay? We're reinventing things here. We call it conversation radio. We're very serious about that. And anytime you've got one of those that's a bit of a Gordian knot, bring it here, please, because there are people hungry for information and who are willing to, you know, this is not the Fox audience. We actually sit and think about stuff.
I like it. That's why I like this. It's the head-on radio network as opposed to the head-off television
right.
network that we've been suffering with. So I do appreciate your work, and let's set up another time. Take it easy, Bob.
Indeed. Take care, Greg. Thank you so much.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, weeknights, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, here on America's Liberal Voice, the Head On Radio Network.
Got a pony dog craving for a fire.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. or go to PeaceCorps.gov.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It was indeed an honor and privilege to sit next to Ambassador Joe Wilson, a true American hero, and to hear him speak. And shocking, in fact, that, so few have simply taken his words and discussed them. I mean, he was on all the shows, and he was angry. But when he said, Libby is covering up the vice president's ongoing crime, he is a traitor, you could practically hear the crickets chirping. I know you know. I know you understand here at the Head On Radio Network. And a lot of you have already posted on my blog at radioinsidescoop.com. I want to encourage folks to do that on any show. Sometimes you don't want to call in, you just want to write something, that's fine. In fact, if you do it during the broadcast, I can read it on air. Every show I do, I got more than 700 now, is archived right there at radioinsidescoop.com. Madeline from Kansas, who goes by the name Mad Fuke, writes, Scooter is pardoned. Now we know the good old boy regime of the current crime family wants liars and traitors that out CIA agents for political ends. And to hell with the rule of law or the USA. Bush's stripes really show with this action. Robert writes that after the commutation, instead of the pardon, the only thing left is a $250,000 fine, which, as I point out, can be paid from the collection taken up for him by Fox and Friends for his defense fund. That way he'll never pay a dime or serve a sentence, yet he's still a convict. And Robert points out that we can't expect much of a president that rates just above Nixon and just below Carter in the job approval department, a man who considers very little of the oath he took to defend the Constitution, the person who treats his presidency as he did his duty in the National Guard during the time of war. But, as Robert points out, he will always remember Scooter as inmate number 2830116. And it would be very appropriate, Robert writes, if all of us would refer to Scooter by his inmate number, I shall for now on. He also posts the quote that I mentioned, the quote of George Bush's father. It's on the Crooks and Liars website. And he compares it on this website to that of Bush Jr. I will repeat both quotes. Bush Sr. said, quote, I have nothing but contempt and anger for those who betray the trust by exposing the name of our sources. They are, in my view, the most insidious of traitors. What did Junior say? Quote, if there's a leak out of my administration, I want to know who it is. And if the person has violated the law, that person will be taken care of. Crooks and Liars writes, we now know exactly what he meant. Taken care of. Yes, I'll make sure that person suffers no consequences. I support, indeed, violating the law. Madeline writes, speculation is that Scooter was going to sing like a canary. Can't have this since this regime stinks from the top down. Skip writes, what's next? A signing statement declaring the entire Constitution invalid until W wants some positive PR? Repeat endlessly after me. Freedom, freedom, freedom. Thanks for your post on the blog. Now we have Susan on the line. Susan, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi there, Mark.
Hello, Susan.
I was kind of wondering, well, first of all, if I was Scooter Libby, I would not be getting on any airplane.
Because?
Taking care of, let's face it.
Oh, in other words, they make sure that that one's shot down?
In the end, all types of death come right down to heart failure, don't they? Remember Ken Lay.
Yes, I remember, in fact, that Saudi Arabian prince that was fingered by some of the 9/11 hijackers who suffered a mysterious heart attack.
Right, heart failure is universal. Now,
that's true.
The reason, actual reason I called in is because in this whole thing about Valerie Plame, I hear very, very, very little mentioned about Brewster Jennings.
Tell us about Brewster Jennings.
Okay, that was the brass plate company she worked for, her cover. But you know as well as I do that anybody, any in any country, after she was outed, that was known to have any contact with that company is now dead.
Well, that's exactly the question I asked Joe Wilson. You recall at the end of the interview, I said, you know, what are the actual results of this? And he said, well, we can't talk about it because the CIA won't let us talk about it. But they've done an assessment report, and whatever Valerie Wilson can talk about will be in her book. And I have one correction for you, Susan. It is Valerie Wilson.
Valerie Plame.
She actually took her husband's name, and Ambassador Wilson makes a point of pointing out that Robert Novak got that wrong, too.
Oh, okay.
So I call her Ms. Wilson or Valerie Plame Wilson or Valerie Wilson because that's her name, and I respect her for her name.
And then
but thanks for your call. One more thing? Go ahead.
Yeah, there was one other massive casualty of this whole thing. Until this time, the United States would recruit people on the ground in various countries to work for our intelligence operators because we would protect them, so on and so forth. If necessary, we would get them out of the country.
Right.
Guess what? No one is ever going to trust this government with their life again.
You know, it's interesting. The 9/11 Commission did many things wrong, but one thing they got right was they talked about that we had too much reliance on electronic intelligence and not enough on people on the ground. There's only so many things you can do with all our fancy satellites. You need someone on the ground who understands the culture, who's going in with, you know, made-up organizations as spies, finding out what's going on.
Exactly.
That's exactly what Valerie Plame Wilson was doing. And the irony is that she was – there's two classes of spies. One class is if you get caught, the government sort of admits that they know you're a spy, and then they can do trades between them.
Right.
And then there's a different class of spy, and this is the kind Valerie Wilson was, the highest possible
class.
They don't
know you.
Where even if she was outed, even if she was discovered, she had a contract that the U.S. government would deny it completely and leave her to be killed.
Yep.
And that was the kind of – of agent, the kind of spy, the kind of brave hero that she was. And that's what George Bush and Vice President Cheney gave to the American people, just told all about her for political reasons.
Yeah, and they shot down any chance of the United States getting good, reasonable, on-the-ground human intelligence because those people on the ground know that they can be outed at any time, and they're not going to die for us.
It was a shot heard round the administration. It made it very clear, you do not criticize this administration. We will ruin your career even if it means we must damage national security and commit traitorous acts in the process. We are willing to be traitors to our country. We are not willing to brook disloyalty to us. A very clear signal. Hey, Susan, thanks for calling in. Call in again sometime.
Thank you. You have a nice day.
Let me go to Dave, who's on the line. Dave, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hey, Mark. Good program. And I have two thoughts on this. One is that the right-wing quackos are taking up big collections on behalf of Guder Libby, and he may already have several million, plus they'll pay the fine, I'm sure. And,
yeah, the fine is nothing.
Right. And the other thing is nobody in this criminal administration could go to jail, because they're not the kind that would just say, well, I'll take the bullet for everybody. They would start talking.
That's right. He couldn't last a single day, Scooter Libby, behind prison. I mean, Susan McDougal, she lasted 18 months. She lasted a year and a half and refused to talk for whatever reason. Apparently, Scooter Libby was a more delicate fiber than Susan McDougal. You're absolutely right. A good
but
point.
I think almost any one of them that ends up in jail taking the bullet for them all is going to start talking. They can't.
Well, Dave, this isn't over. This isn't over. Everyone in the news, you know, Fox News, the propaganda channel, was very much of a, you know, there's nothing to see here, just move along, like a cop at an accident. You know, nothing to see here, move along. President can do this, go away. There's actually a lot of different things that can be done. And I want to close by talking about those things. Thanks for your call, Dave. I do appreciate it. First, I want to give a terrific idea, a little more play, from my fellow co-host, Bob Kincaid. Bob Kincaid points out something that I haven't heard anyone point out before. Way to have an eagle eye, Bob. That Scooter Libby is still on probation. In other words, his sentence was commuted, but he still has 2 years probation and the fine. And Bob wonders whether the judge couldn't say, all right, you violated your probation. We're going to insist that you serve those 2 years. Now, as I told Bob on the phone, you know, the president could simply commute it again. And Bob said, well, make him do it. Make him do it. Make the president pardon him twice. You know, I guess that's a possibility. But I want to talk about other possibilities beyond that, because this is an issue that's broader than Scooter Libby. This is an issue that has to do with the powers of the Congress of the United States. And these are the things that Congress can do, because, you know, we forget that when Mark Rich was pardoned by Bill Clinton, Congress condemned it. They had a vote, an overwhelming vote, to condemn that pardon. Well, Congress could certainly do the same here. Another thing Congress can do, and this is very, very important, folks, and a great reason to call your member of Congress. You know how Ken Starr's report detailing every sexual act he could possibly find on Bill Clinton, consensual or not, mostly consensual, was spilled before the American people like a two-bit cheap cigar? Well, why was that done? Because Congress decided to do it. Both Bush and Cheney have had interviews with Patrick Fitzgerald. That is part of the record. This is part of what I was talking about with Joe Wilson. This is part of what he's trying to find in his civil suit. And I wish him and Ms. Wilson all the best luck in the world. But if they don't succeed, that's okay. Congress, the Democratic Congress, can subpoena those records. They can investigate it themselves. Indeed, here's an idea that hasn't been suggested anywhere. Here's what you do, Congress. You say, Scooter Libby, we're going to have you raise your right hand and tell the truth. And you know what? We'll give you what we gave Monica Goodling. Anything further that you say now, you will not be prosecuted for. All right? But you got to tell the truth. And if you don't tell the truth, we can still prosecute you for perjury. Pretty good, huh? Make him tell the truth. Is the president going to withhold Scooter Libby from Congress? If so, hold the president in contempt. Send the sergeant of arms to arrest little Georgie. Congress is not finished with this. The game is not over. The president has told us throughout, I'm not going to talk about a pending case, Vice President. I'm not going to talk about a pending case. The case ain't pending no more, folks. It ain't pending no more. So reporters, get on the ball and say to George Bush, case over. What did you do? What did you know, and when did you know it? Vice President Cheney, did you tell Scooter Libby to out Valerie Wilson, or didn't you? And, oh, would you mind answering that question under oath? After all, they got rid of 90% of D.C. jurors because they said, hey, you know, Cheney's going to testify, and do you have a negative opinion of Dick Cheney? And well more than 90% of District of Columbia voters have a negative opinion of Dick Cheney. So they got rid of all the Democrats that way. Saying Cheney was going to testify. He didn't testify. He didn't testify at all. Well, now it's time. Now it's time to face the American people. Now it's time to begin the investigation all over again, Congress. And it's not that hard to do. It's not just a civil suit. I wish Mr. Wilson and his wife well. It's also what Congress can do. Now, what else can be done? Well, for one thing, we can simply compare the president's pardons to other pardons. This is not a president who pardons people very often. If you do the crimes that George Bush almost certainly did in his youth being defined as under 40 for George Bush, like snorting cocaine, you can go years to prison. But a traitor to their country, nah, no prison time at all. No real fine either, after all. As people point out, Fox and Friends will pay for it. And please, let's get rid of the stupid argument. Let's just get rid of it once and for all that Valerie Wilson was not a covert agent. I read to you from count one of the grand jury indictment, which Patrick Fitzgerald was ready, willing, and able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. Paragraph 1F. Read it for yourself, my friends. Joseph Wilson was married to Valerie Plame Wilson. At all relevant times, from January 1st, 2002 through July 2003, Valerie Wilson was employed by the CIA, and her employment status was classified. Prior to July 14th, 2003, Valerie Wilson's affiliation with the CIA was not common knowledge outside the intelligence community. That's all you need to know, folks. And next time some Republican, and I have him on my show and I'll have him back, comes on the air and says, "Oh no, everybody knew about Valerie Plame," you say, "Everybody? Name one. Name one person without a top secret clearance who knew about Valerie Wilson before Vice President Cheney decided it was payback time for Joe Wilson." I'm going to be having some Republicans to talk about this, and I have a lot of questions for them. Simple questions, such as, when is it proper for a subordinate of the president to obstruct justice and lie to investigators? When's it a good thing? When should it be done? Should he do so to protect the president or vice president from treason, for example? And if not, why not? And if so, why so? Why is it important to protect the president and vice president from treason? Another question for my Republicans, and don't miss it when I ask it to them. When is it right for the president to destroy a CIA agent and ruin that agent's work and damage national security for political reasons? When is it a good idea? Remember, these are the same Republicans who argue that national security is so important that we have to shred the Constitution to get it. We have to put people in jail without trial, violations of the Fifth Amendment. We have to not give them attorneys, violation of the Sixth Amendment. We have to wiretap without warrants, violations of the Fourth Amendment. We have to torture, violation of the Eighth Amendment. We have to violate the Constitution. It's so important for our national security. But outing a CIA agent, well, you know, that's not important. That's not important at all. At least not when it's being done to protect the president. So what was the quid pro quo? Even the jury felt that Scooter Libby was taking the fall for the vice president. And how did the vice president respond? He said, "Oh, Scooter Libby has, quote, the highest personal integrity," unquote. Hold on. I know it's hard to hear that without vomiting. So, you know, protect yourself. The highest personal integrity, says the traitor to the man who protected him. No apology. None whatsoever. Scooter Libby is proud of what he did. He believes that loyalty to the president is more important than loyalty to country. He is the very embodiment of tyranny. When we go out and complain about a dictator and people being more loyal to that dictator than to their country, we know exactly who they're talking about. They're talking about Scooter Libby. They're talking about Karl Rove. The guidelines were clear. The president says they were excessive. The guidelines were clear. This is a president who says, no, if you smoke, a couple grams of crack, you should go to jail for 10 years. We are not going to go outside the sentencing guidelines, the president has said in every single other case. But in this case, they're excessive. In every other case, the Department of Justice guidelines are you wait 5 years, you make them serve some time, you consult with the Department of Justice, you consult with the prosecutor, Patrick Fitzgerald. George Bush did none of that. None of that. And so what are the Republicans doing? Well, they're trying to talk about everything else. Oh, well, let's talk about the Mark Rich pardon. Let's talk about that. I mean, after all, Scooter Libby represented Mark Rich, so I guess it's okay. I'll tell you something about the Mark Rich pardon. I'm not going to defend it. And there's a huge difference between Democrats and Republicans. Because Democrats didn't defend it. They said, "Bill Clinton, you were wrong." And that's the difference. Democrats are intellectually honest. Republicans are willing to lie through their teeth and do whatever they can to stay in power. And, of course, a big difference with Mark Rich is no quid pro quo, folks. Mark Rich didn't work in the Clinton administration. Susan McDougal did, but, hey, she at least served 18 months. So who else did they throw out? Clinton? Clinton was never convicted of anything, my friends. Much definitely not perjury. He was acquitted by the Senate, never tried by a court. So what's left? What's left is presidential candidates, people like Fred Thompson, saying, "Oh, no, we got to impeach the president over a sex act." But God knows, treason is not a big deal. Really, the most similar action I can think of is Ford pardoning Richard Nixon. Because here we have an obvious criminal, an obvious traitor to his nation, an obvious person who has sacrificed his country for some private gain. Frankly, Benedict Arnold had more honor than Scooter Libby and Vice President Cheney. That's it for the Inside Scoop. Have a happy July 4th, everyone. We are still a free and independent nation despite all these things. And tune in Thursday live for more of the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine signing off.
Transportation Security Administration say there is no specific threat, but special teams will be on duty to enhance transit system security for the 4th of July holiday. More than 41 million Americans. Police cleared a terminal at London's Heathrow Airport to check out a suspicious package. More than 100 flights were canceled as officers carried out an investigation. Authorities are keeping the threat level across Britain at critical, requiring passengers undergo secondary searches before being allowed to board outbound flights. British investigators are questioning at least 8 people in connection with the failed car bomb attacks on London and in Scotland. At least 4 of those arrested are doctors who work for the British health system. The investigation has spread across the globe. One arrest was made in Australia. U.S. military forces killed at least 23 insurgents suspected of having links with al-Qaeda during a fierce battle in Iraq's western Anbar province. According to U.S. military sources, insurgents there were attempting to reestablish a base of operations. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki's cabinet is taking steps towards meeting the benchmarks set by the U.S. Iraqi officials have approved a draft of a key oil law which will define distribution of the country's oil revenues. Debate could begin on its approval as early as tomorrow. In Pakistan, at least 8 people have been killed and 120 injured during a violent standoff between Pakistani security forces and armed students who want Islamic Sharia law imposed. President Bush said he won't rule out a pardon for